If you're looking to save some money on your wireless plan, take a look at Visible Wireless. They're a transparent wireless carrier with nothing to hide. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, where you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. One line wireless, just $25 a month with taxes and fees included. That's unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Switch now at Visible.com. You shouldn't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. Like Visible, the wireless company making wireless visible.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I hope to open the conversation about working parents a bit. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier, to find out how they balance being a dad with a successful career. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Steve Downes, the voice of Master Chief, Sierra 117, and you're listening to Podcast Unlocked, the world's number one Xbox podcast. Now, finish this fight. Master Chief, out.
What's happening, friends? Welcome to Podcast Unlocked. It's episode 452 for July 14th, 2020. Coming up on this week's show, Jason Ronald from the Xbox Series X team at Microsoft returning to the podcast. We're going to talk a little Xbox Velocity architecture, digging a bit more on what that particular next-gen feature is all about. Plus, Ubisoft had their Ubisoft Forward event over the weekend. They revealed one big new game and gave a lot more details on a couple of their other big ones. Plus, Phil Spencer making the rounds, making a couple of interesting comments about next gen. So we'll talk about all that and more. I'm Ryan McCaffrey, joined as always by the what's the opposite of hypoallergenic? Just allergenic, Miranda Sanchez.
Allergy susceptible. yeah, my eyes are kind of puffy right now. So it's just, anyway, I'm here. Hello.
Hang in there. We appreciate you. You're hanging tough. Sticking around on the podcast this week. Destin Legarry.
Hopefully I can bam the allergies away and make
there it
feel
is.
Better.
Please. That's what we're waiting for. Brendan Tyrell, how are you, sir?
Hi, how you doing? got a world's largest eye roll for that one.
As he sips some coffee. All right. Well, guys, I wanted to start by just reiterating for our audience the plan for July 23rd. That is the date that we have circled on our calendar. The big Xbox event, the one we've been waiting for quite some time. It's not the last one of the year. We've been promised something every month in some way, shape, or form. But this is the big one, the biggest one so far, July 23rd, the Xbox Game Showcase. It will be this crew live beforehand as a pre-show. Join us. We'll get you hyped up. We'll get ready for it. And then watch along with us on IGN. And then join us immediately afterwards. You won't even have to touch that remote control, as they used to say. Just stick with us for the live post show, which we will then dive into all the analysis of what we just saw, whatever it's going to be on July 23rd. Well, let me get right to it here. I want to go Destin's way first. Ubisoft Forward over the weekend. Far Cry 6 being the big announcement there. And of course, typical Ubisoft, it leaked ahead of time, but they did show a cinematic trailer that really kind of set the tone for this game. Destin, what'd you think?
Yeah, getting to see Giancarlo Esposito deliver that dialogue to his son in the game, Diego, was pretty great. Like, the way that he is just, he's like insane. He's obsessed with his own power in that trailer. And the whole grenade narrative device as he's delivering this dialogue just kept me hooked throughout the trailer, actually. And I can't wait to see what he does with that villain character and how they develop his son, Diego, and how that relationship ends up playing out in the end. I really enjoyed that. And I want to know more about Far Cry 6 personally.
Brandon, we're going back to a tropical setting. Does this make you happy, or would you have rather seen them go somewhere totally new?
I don't really care, to be honest. when it comes to Far Cry, it's been all over the place, the Himalayas, the tropical islands,
Montana,
you know, that exotic locale. To me, I just want to echo what Destin said. The elements that they showcased in the beginning, specifically with that sort of cinematic introduction to the villain and the villain's family, that's way more interesting than the setting for me, especially because we haven't seen a whole lot of the setting. So, I'm more interested in that dynamic, especially I'm wondering, like, you know, there was that weird conspiracy going on a couple of days before where they were matching up the son's scar over his eyebrow with Ross's scar over his eyebrow. Turns out that's totally doesn't seem to be in play. But I'm really curious how they're going to treat the son. Is there going to be a time jump and he's the actual villain, you know, molded by his tyrannical father? Or are they going to do something that I think is more interesting and actually feature the child in the game as sort of this weird antagonist? Or maybe, you know, forced antagonist, I suppose, under the clutches of his father. So looks cool. Looks awesome. I just want to see more.
Miranda, your thoughts?
I mean, you guys know how I feel about Ubisoft games. Most of them are fairly uninteresting to me. It is a fun performance, but I'm just watching. Yep. About it.
Yeah, this series, Far Cry's turned into this huge series. I think Ubisoft has done a good job of making it their own. But at the same point, even though they have changed the settings, I've weirdly not been able to get into the last couple of them. Like, 3 I loved. 3, I mean, that I think if you polled most people, except for Mitch Dyer, who'd say 2, but 3 is probably the generally regarded favorite, I think. If it would win in a poll.
Far Cry 5 is pretty good because it dealt with cults and
right.
It was like backcountry sort of roads, stuff like that. I actually
I like the bear.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun in 5, and I also really like 3.
Yeah, and then like 4 seemed kind of like just a 3.5 and the Primal.
Far Cry Primal.
I couldn't. I did that.
That's
at a
Damon's
event.
Favorite.
Hey, to each their own. Yeah. I mean, that one didn't hold me. I don't know. I'll always give it a try. It's due out at the end of February. So a quick announcement to release. That strikes me as a game that I like. As soon as I heard that release date, I went, I couldn't help. My instinctive reflex was, oh, that's going to get delayed. which fine if it does, you know, you want a good game, but it just seemed like an odd one. Like, okay, well, but then again, Ubisoft has definitely shipped big games in Q1, but
I think I think Far Cry 5 was it March?
I think you're right.
Yeah, I actually like it when they do those earlier releases,
too.
just peppering it out over time, especially for something that's probably going to be a bigger open world sort of experience. It's nice to have those peppered out, which is not necessarily the case this fall.
Yeah, you're so right. I put out a tweet that got a surprising amount of pickup. Like, it was just sort of a random thought over the weekend when after the Forward event, because this fall we have the following open world games. We have Assassin's Creed Valhalla, Watch Dogs Legion, because we'll talk about Watch Dogs in a second. That's out October 29th. And the release date for Assassins we'll talk about too. That's November 17th. So you've got Assassins, you've got Watch Dogs, two big, probably huge open world games from Ubisoft. Then you've got Cyberpunk 2077, which Miranda, you and I have played. So we have a sense of how huge that we talked all about how big that game feels. And it's definitely open world. You can go wherever you want. Then you've got Spider-Man Miles Morales on PS5. If you end up picking a PS5, picking up a PS5, you play that. And should the, tonal hint from that first Halo Infinite trailer prove correct, and Halo is more of an open ring, go wherever kind of experience, that could end up being classified as an open world game. So that's a lot of large open world games coming out in a 2-month span. So that's just like, I don't even know how you'd keep up in the water cooler conversation with that. Like, there's nothing stopping you from playing them months from now, but if you want to kind of be part of the conversation, how do you do that? I don't know.
You don't. It's impossible. I mean, I'm sure someone out there has figured it out, and props to you, Kevin, for like putting in the hours, but I also think it's pretty cool that you've got games that are that dense with that much to do, like butting right up against a new console launch. Like, you know, you buy one on current gen, you buy one on next gen, and then, you know, when the consoles drop, you make the switch and you've got another 80 hours of game to play.
Yeah. Yeah, good call. All right, so that's Far Cry 6. Watch Dogs. Now, Miranda, this one seemed more up your alley. We were talking before we went live. The fact that there is no primary character. Your primary character is whoever you want it to be, and you're always recruiting new people into your legion, like, of course, good old Helen, the elderly woman from E3 last year. Did that one strike your fancy a little bit more than some of the other stuff?
I got to work on the Watch Dogs 2 wiki a little bit, so I actually did have some fun with that one. And I guess what I do like about Watch Dogs, even though it has like that Ubisoft blueprint of like a big open world and there's just stuff everywhere, and if it's interesting, maybe, maybe not. But what I was interested with the gameplay with Watch Dogs Legion was like the variety of tools that you have. Potentially depending on the people you get within like your legion. And I think that's like kind of a fun mechanic to have. How fun that will be, I think, depends on how well each of those kind of different archetypes are built. But it does look like it could be an interesting playground for mischief. So
that's a good way to put it. Destin, are you a Watch Dogs guy?
Yeah, I am absolutely going to recruit the most useless team I possibly can for Watch Dogs Legion. When I'm able to get my crew, I'm just going to look for like, because like in the trailer, they actually recruit a bunch of elderly people and they turn out to have unique skill sets. So I'm going to be really curious to target people that would seem to be useless and get into their real backstory and figure out what benefits they can actually offer to your team. But yeah, my goal is going to be to make a useless team and then make that somehow work for the Watch Dogs story.
Find the Ryan McCaffrey NPC.
Yeah, he'll be the first one I recruit.
Oh man. Yeah, that's I tell you, I like some of what they showed of being able to kind of hack up, rig up bombs and stuff where you actually don't even have to directly engage. It's clear another Ubisoft E3 air quotes event passes and we get no mention of Splinter Cell. But little just bits of Splinter Cell get sprinkled in all the other Ubisoft games. I think that's the closest we're ever going to get. We're never going to see Sam Fisher again, except as Ghost Recon DLC. But at least, yes, Watch Dogs is doing some, you know, little bit of Splinter Cell-like things. And then finally on, let's see, because what we got Jason Ronald coming in a few minutes. Assassin's Creed. Now, Brandon Tyrell, you are a big fan of that series. You have repeatedly stated you think Odyssey, the most recent one, is the best of this now, gosh, however many games it is. Probably it's got to be at least 8 or 10 games by now, and you love Odyssey. So what do you make of what you saw this weekend at Ubisoft Forward for Assassin's Creed Valhalla?
I think it's hard to tell, really. I mean, I watched the full presentation. It very much seems like they are continuing. They're doing what they did with the original Assassin's Creed, which is take that foundation and build on it. And they built and built and built all the way up through, you know, really kind of Assassin's Creed 4, Black Flag. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, shortly after that, they made the switch to Origins and that started a new foundation and they're building on that. So Valhalla really does seem like the next iteration of that, you know, this new game system that they've built and turned Assassin's Creed into. It's not really a stealth action game anymore. It's an open world RPG, which I'm down, you know, with as a big nerdy fantasy guy and history buff and mythology guy. I can't wait to dive into that. Everything that I saw looks really, really cool. You know, more of what you're used to. There are some new mechanics and elements they've added, but I'll be honest with you, I watched the presentation on Sunday and I can't really remember what they are. So they didn't like blow me away or anything, but it seems like a bunch of nice little quality life improvements, which is kind of all I want out of another Odyssey type game, which is what Valhalla seems like it's going to be, but with, you know, a Norse wrapping on it, which is fantastic because that culture is so weird and diverse and, you know, it doesn't really get the same sort of shine as a lot of other cultures get. They tend to focus on the barbarous sort of Viking elements of it. So I'm really, really curious to see how they dive in and sort of humanize these people and tell that story of the sort of invasion of Great Britain. So
it's funny you mentioned that Assassins has turned more into an RPG now. It's probably fair to say that they've taken those stealth elements really and moved them, like that's Watch Dogs now, right? So they've almost sort of
in an ideal world it would
their
be,
identities.
Yeah, in an ideal world it would be a new Splinter Cell game, but I'd say more of the stealth action that we're used to in, you know, what Assassin's Creed was previously is now in sort of the vein of Watch Dogs, and then Far Cry is your first person open world shooter, and Assassin's Creed is now your third person action adventure RPG. So I know it's a weird sort of alphabet soup of genre types, but you know, they all accomplish slightly different things while still using the main thing, to Miranda's point, that Ubisoft does, which is give you a big ass world and fill it with a ton of little things to do. I know we did see stealth in there. Like there were little groups that you could walk around with and move with. Sort of a nod to old Assassin's Creeds, but yeah. It seems like the blueprint is moving forward based on Origins and Odyssey. And you know, I know it's a divisive opinion. Some people really like the old style, but I'm here for it. I like it. More open world action games, I say.
And we've got 3 minutes till we're going to pipe in Jason from the Xbox team. So I just want to talk release dates here real quick. October 29th for Watch Dogs and November 17th for Assassin's Creed. Mm-hmm. I will go Miranda's way first. Miranda, do you think that Assassin's release date in particular offers any hint of the Series X's release date itself on the hardware side?
I mean, I'd like to hope so, just because we also have Cyberpunk hitting right around there too. So it would make a lot of sense to me that we see these out in November. I don't see why they would want to launch too late after.
Because it is day and date. At least they've said that it will be on the console at launch. So seemingly this would hint that Assassins is out, or that the Series X is out on or after November 17th, yes, as opposed to before.
Yes, and I would assume that they'd want to at least have the consoles out before they put that out, especially if they're trying to showcase, like, look at our next-gen potential. Like, I don't see them wanting to put out this before the next-gen consoles are out.
Destin, you agree? Or do you think that this is just, it's just a game release date and the console could still come earlier?
I think it's coincidental. I think the console is going to come out in October.
Really?
It'll come out near the end of October to set us up for Black Friday and the holiday season.
Oh, that's
sort of my take on it.
I hope you're right, because that would mean Halo comes out sooner, and that would mean you can play Halo before all this other stuff comes out in November. All right, stick with us here. We're going to come right back in just a second with Jason Ronald from Xbox. We're back with Jason Ronald from the Xbox Series X team. He is, as you remember from last time, the Director of Program Management. Jason, so good to have you back, sir.
Thank you very much. I'm excited to be back.
So here we are in July. First party game showcase is coming up, but your work on the hardware side continues. Before we get rolling, I'm curious, are you getting any sleep at this point, or is it, I don't sort of know how, you know, software, certainly they're going to be going up to the last second. What's your life like right now and your team's lives?
It's a great question. I mean, things are definitely exciting right now. You know, in the build up to a launch, it's always an exciting time. And definitely with everybody working from home, you know, it's introduced some unique challenges. But overall, we're really happy with how the team's pivoted to working from home. And we're excited for launch later this year.
Fantastic. All right. Well, we've got you for a few minutes here. We're going to kind of go around the table. Everybody's got some questions prepared. So we're talking specifically today because we've been kind of, you know, we're zeroing in with you on IGN and here on Unlocked as well on sort of some of these, just getting to know more about these specific next gen features baked into the Xbox Series X. So we're talking Xbox Velocity architecture today. So I kind of want to start with you. I read your blog post, but like sort of, for me, it's this nebulous thing. Like, what does that really mean? So, like, holistically, what is Velocity architecture? Because it's a speed thing, but it's not just about the hard drive, right? It's not just about the NVMe SSD drive.
Yeah. So, you know, with many things with the Xbox Series X, a lot of it really starts with the feedback from developers. So very early on in the program, we reach out to developers all across the industry and really talk to them about what they saw the future of their games or what games they really like aspired to go build. And, you know, at the platform level, what our goal is to make sure that we eliminate any technical barriers to from them being able to deliver on that creative vision. And one of the things that became very clear is I/O is very constraining for a lot of game developers. A lot of times they'll have to funnel a player through like a hallway or put them in an elevator to kind of work around some of the limitations of the technology. So that feedback really influenced us and informed us. And as we're thinking about next generation, we really had to think about how do we like reinvent or, you know, revolutionize how a traditional I/O system works. And to your point, Ryan, it's not just hardware. It's really that deep integration between hardware and software to make sure that developers can take full advantage of the capabilities of the hardware that we have, as well as allowing them to be much more efficient to get even more performance beyond the raw hardware specs.
Well, Brandon, go ahead.
I was going to jump right in.
Please, no, go ahead.
I actually had a question along those same lines. You know, there's one of the big selling points of the, although I guess all the way back to the Xbox One X now, is that, yes, games can be optimized for it, but there is a certain performance bump that you'll just see inherently to, you know, the power of the hardware, regardless of the software. What you just described sounds like something that can be utilized and taken advantage of by developers, but is this something that actually specifically needs to be designed, or will we see a similar sort of advancement for any software just based on the hardware?
Yeah, so the hardware alone provides a tremendous amount of benefits. And like, if you look at what we showed earlier this year with some of our backwards compatible games and the dramatic change in load times, clearly those games were written before this hardware even existed. So you're already seeing, just from a raw hardware perspective, the massive advantages of going to an SSD level I/O performance. But what really excites us is what developers can do beyond the hardware. As we think across the generation, I think there's going to be a lot of innovation in this space as developers really start to understand what the true capabilities are and how they can kind of rethink even how they build their games or how they design their games with all these new capabilities available to them.
Destin, I have a note here that you have a super nerdy SSD question, so please.
Yeah, so I'm looking at the stats for the hard drive. It looks like you have it standardized at 2.4 gigabytes per second raw, but it can go up to 4.8 gigabytes seconds. How did you land on those speeds? What benefits are developers going to be able to utilize from that specifically? And because looking at Gen 4 M2 NVMe drives, they can do up to 4,400 to 5,000. You guys kind of seem to have landed on this sweet spot. I'm just wondering how you came to that conclusion and what benefits developers will have to have with this tremendous speed.
Sure. So one of the core principles that we have is consistent, sustained performance. Because as a developer, you want to have those guarantees so that you don't have to worry about variability in the performance of the console itself. And if you think about a traditional SSD that maybe exists in your PC or whatnot, you know, if the SSD gets hot, the performance actually drops. Or if the SSD needs to perform maintenance, all of a sudden you can get hitches and whatnot. So we really designed this around consistent, sustained performance. And that also applies to the expandable storage module that we have as well, because we didn't want developers to have to worry about a different performance characteristic if the drive or if the game's running on the internal drive or if it's on expandable storage. It's really about that optimal, consistent, sustained performance. And then with all the other advances that we have, like the new Direct Storage API or sampler feedback streaming, that even allows developers a lot more fine-tuned control to get even more efficiency out of the drive beyond just the raw bandwidth itself.
Now, Jason, okay. Go ahead, Destin, if you got a follow-up there, feel free.
No, I was just like, knowing that it expands up to 4.8 gigabytes per second, I was just sort of curious about the nitty-gritty of why not just say that number and why the sustained was so important. So thank you for answering the question.
So, Jason, now I was, again, reading through the blog post. You had touched on this like back when the early spec reveals of the console, which feels like 6 years ago, but it was just a few months ago. But it's this Xbox Velocity architecture. It's not just about loading times, though, right? There's even, like, it gets into image quality, and does it even sort of affect frame rate? Like, can you kind of speak to the, again, holistic nature of it?
Sure. So the Xbox Velocity architecture really comprises four components that all come together. And to your point, Ryan, it's even beyond load times. So, you know, you've got the custom NVMe SSD at kind of the foundation, but then we have hardware decompression technology on top of that, because game assets are actually compressed to minimize the size of the game, the footprint on the drive. And, you know, if you just used software-based decompression, we could consume easily 2 to 4 CPU cores. And that would take away from the game that you're actually playing. So now we can offload that. So in many ways, that's kind of free for a developer. And then you look at things like direct storage, where it's really about how quickly and how a developer can prioritize what data gets loaded. So if you think about like a fast travel system in a game, as an example, you know, being able to be more fine-grained and being able to control how you actually load that data. And then you look at something like sampler feedback streaming, we actually have customizations into the GPU itself so that you don't even have to load entire textures into memory, so that you can be that much more efficient with it. Because one of the things that we did is we actually had custom hardware in the Xbox One X, which actually allowed us to inventory how memory is actually being used by titles. And what we realized is there's a lot of IO bandwidth and there's a lot of memory that's being used because developers didn't have this level of precision. So now I don't have to load the entire texture into memory. I can just load the portions that I need for that individual frame, which allows more GPU power for better effects, more diversity of objects in the open world, a more dense open world. So it really kind of impacts a lot of different systems. And it's really about giving developers that flexibility and that control to make sure that their games are really delivering on that creative vision and a true transformative gaming experience.
Could that even benefit frame rate as well? Or would that be more of a CPU issue?
It's both, you know, so it's about visual quality. And at the end of the day, frame rate is really dictated by CPU, memory bandwidth, IO, and the GPU. So all of these really come together to define that gaming experience.
So I've got another question. My guess is you're not going to answer this, but I'm going to try, just because you never know until you try. So I'm curious about this custom hard drive that we're talking about here, the NVMe SSD drive that's in the Series X. How much of it is going to actually be available to players after system and OS files inevitably take up some of it? So sort of what's, because it's, you know, you're talking about the expansion drive as well, and probably expecting that to not be super cheap given its capabilities. So kind of curious what block of that, what block is going to be available for game storage this fall?
Yeah, so we're not ready to share the final numbers because like we're still finishing up the user experience and whatnot. But, you know, that's part of the reason why we have things like hardware decompression as an example, because we want to be as respectful as possible and, you know, make sure the actual game footprint on that drive is as small as possible. We have other capabilities that we provided to developers as well, so that developers can be more intelligent about what assets actually get installed. So as an example, you know, if you're a primarily English speaking player, maybe you don't have to download, you know, other languages or audio files for other languages, so that we can once again reduce that footprint overall, so that we can be as respectful as possible. And then as a player, you don't have to worry about storage management as much. Even though, you know, at the end of the day, for most of us, we have tons of games and we want to be able to be flexible with that. So it's really about, you know, putting the control in the player's hands and really trying to compress those games as much as possible.
Boy, in an age of ever increasing file sizes for games, but also ever increasing pervasiveness of bandwidth caps from internet providers, that is a relief to hear right there. Go ahead, Miranda.
I was just going to say that I could see that being a huge helpful thing for games like Call of Duty, which have just had increasingly larger updates that just kind of are almost like mind-boggling how big they get. And I think it'd be very nice to have that storage size like just kind of minimized in a way. Do you have any sort of estimate about like how much this would actually change those download sizes? I mean, obviously we don't know what these next games look like, but is there any sort of like tangible, like, oh, well, maybe it'll be like this much percentage potentially of a decrease on the storage downloads and such?
Yeah, it's a hard question to answer because the answer really varies game to game. Right. You know, in some games, you know, they're very large open world games and it's really hard to do that. In other cases, you know, maybe you have single player and multiplayer and they're almost like distinct modes. So it's hard to provide a general number. But, you know, when we were making certain design decisions, we looked across all the titles in the portfolio, what the average size was, how they were actually being played. And then, like I mentioned before, we did talk to developers as well as they're thinking about kind of their games next year or 5 years into the future. And what level of fidelity and control do we need to give them to make sure that the player has the best experience possible?
Actually, Jason, I have a follow-up on that too. Is that so? Because I'm liking this. I mean, this sounds like a great feature. Is it something that is going to be required as part of the submission, the certification and submission process for every developer, where, you know, I don't know how it works on the back end, but if something has to get flagged for like, okay, well, this, you know, this is, what, to your example, foreign language files, so they're optional installations based on the region of the console. Like, is it a thing that you guys are going to be kind of baking into the certification and submission process for Series X, or is it totally a developer by developer choice to flag that stuff to piece out those downloads?
Yeah, it's not really a certification requirement, but we work very closely with all the best developers all around the world. We understand their technology stack. We understand kind of how they design and build their games. So a lot of it is just kind of partnering with them and really working through and making sure they're aware of here's all the options available to us and finding that right solution that works with the kind of game that they're building as well as what the player's expectations were. Because at the end of the day, it doesn't benefit anybody if, you know, games are massively huge, you know, and like it's a really long download time, or like you were talking about with bandwidth caps and whatnot. So it's more of a partnership between us and the developer as opposed to like a strict certification requirement.
Because, you know, like back in the day, in the 360 days, you guys required live arcade games to be under a certain file size for a while. So I know that's what made me think of that. I know stuff like that has existed in the past for, of course, back then there were still memory card options, so you had to take that stuff into account. Well, everybody else speak now or forever hold your peace. I think that's everything I've got for Jason on Velocity architecture. Jason, thank you. I want to have you back. There are more interesting topics, next gen features to discuss. So I hope you'll come back in the near future.
Absolutely. And I'm always excited to come back. And, you know, this is always a great conversation. So I'm really excited for future conversations.
Fantastic. Jason Ronald, Director of Program Management for the Xbox Series X at Microsoft. We will see you again, sir.
See ya.
Thank you to Jason Ronald for stopping by once again. We'll look to have him on again in the future because we've got plenty of time left to go. A lot left to talk about with this console before it launches. Back to the news, because there is plenty of it to talk about. Destin, we've got Mr. Phil Spencer making the rounds. Really good piece on gamesindustry.biz, a couple of them actually this week, covering Microsoft and the Series X. Well, our friend Phil Spencer, who I know is listening at the dog park somewhere someday, I don't know when, but it's now to him as he's listening to my voice right now. Phil is not having your Xbox One is holding the Series X games back argument. So in an interview with gamesindustry.biz, he said this, quote, "Frankly, held back is a meme that gets created by people who are too caught up in device competition. I just look at Windows. It's almost certain if the developer is building a Windows version of their game, then the most powerful and highest fidelity version is the PC version. You can even see that with some of our first-party console games going to PC, even from our competitors, that the richest version is the PC version. Yet, the PC ecosystem is the most diverse when it comes to hardware when you think about the CPUs and GPUs from years ago that are there." So he goes on, yes, every developer is going to find a line and say that this is the hardware that I'm going to support, but the diversity of hardware choice in PC has not held back the highest fidelity PC games on the market. The highest fidelity PC games rival anything that anybody has ever seen in video games, So this idea that developers don't know how to build games or game engines or ecosystems that work across a set of hardware, there's a proof point in PC that shows that's not the case. Destiny seems like he's making a lot of sense right there.
Thank you, Phil. Like, how many times does this have to be communicated? We've had this conversation on this show. We've had game developers talk about developing for multiple platforms. No, nothing is held back. There's no holding back. Like, that's just not a thing. So I'm really glad Phil is just like, okay, like, come on. Like, this has been for years, this has been in development. Like, go look at the PC ecosystem is what he's saying, basically. They develop for, like, thousands of different hardware configurations, and do they hold back? No, they push stuff, they push games to their limits. So this idea that developing on the Series X is going to hold back anything, it's not true. Period. Done.
Brandon Tyrell, what do you make of this?
Right there with Destin. I'm glad Phil didn't hold back. And I know there's, you know, you have to address these things with a certain, you know, a modicum of I don't know.
Patience?
I don't think patience is the right word, but yeah, we'll go with that one. you have to have a certain level of decorum when you answer these things, but I really do appreciate the fact that he just basically calls it out what it is. Like, it is a meme. It's a talking point based off hyper tribal people who really, you know, want to plant their flag in a certain camp and look for any other reason to discount the competitor. Frankly, it's super tiring, and I'm really glad to see somebody, especially somebody, you know, with Phil's stature, calls it what it is, right? Calls them like you see them. It's silly. Like, they've been doing this for years. The PC is a perfect proof point for it. It's a non-story. I think the bigger story here is Microsoft continues to say, do what they've been doing and finding success with recently, which is actually address things and say them openly, again, with that certain, you know, patina of you know, decorum, I guess. But they're actually addressing the things that come up in a straight way, and I appreciate that. I think that level of sort of like genuine shoot from the hip kind of communication is really, I think, needed, and I think it's been missing.
Yeah, it's fair. Now, Miranda, I feel like, I don't know how you feel about this, but it seems to me that this issue, no matter how strongly Phil words it, is probably going to float around in like the hardcore, you know, corners of the gaming community until when this console actually comes out and we can put Halo Infinite side by side on a Series X, a PC, and an Xbox One or One X, and then really see the differences and be able to judge for ourselves.
Absolutely. I think that will go a long way. I mean, be able to see the proof of that is very helpful. At the same time, I am also glad that Phil addressed it as a meme, because there are a lot of people out there who are maybe in different gaming spaces, and they hear this from other people and say, right. Oh, yeah, it could be holding it back. Like, I could see that if they've never really considered the PC side of things. Maybe they just aren't really big into PC gaming, and I wouldn't fault them for not knowing that. And so I think Phil coming up and saying, hey, this is a thing that is happening here. Let's just address this really quickly. It's a joke. Obviously, there's a lot of proof that this isn't something that's going to hold things back. But to your point, of course, having those side-by-side comparisons are going to go a long way.
Yeah, there is a point. Messaging is a weird thing because you can't address every false, misleading, partially true thing that comes along about your product or your company. But if every now and again you have to, or else the perception becomes reality, and suddenly you've kind of lost that battle. So yeah, I thought it was cool to see him come out and just be pretty definitive about it in his, to Brandon's point, very appropriate way of handling it. Another tip of the cap this week in our last big story here to gamesindustry.biz, they did a couple of cool Microsoft stories this week. This one was about how all the new studios have acclimated to Microsoft, but really the what's cool about the story is it's actually more about the reverse, about how Microsoft has acclimated their culture to the new studios culture. So there's, I'm not going to obviously read the whole thing. It's a really good in-depth piece, but I wanted to bring up a few points with you guys. One, there's a section about In Exile, makers of Wasteland 3. That's Brian Fargo's studio. And this, so we learned that In Exile is staffing up for their next project after Wasteland 3, which we'd already talked about on this podcast. We know from Brian Fargo's public comments that is going to be an Unreal Engine 5 role-playing game. And they say In Exile was eager to grow its team and has already, meaning since the acquisition by Microsoft, has already added more than 20 people with plans to add 20 more. Quote, as a smaller developer, we always knew the positions that we were missing and the things that we wanted to do to up our game, Fargo explains. We want to show what we're capable of and step it up a notch in terms of the experiences we can deliver. In Exile was eager to grow its team and has already added more than 20 people since the acquisition with plans to add 20 more. And he continues, as a smaller developer, we always knew the positions that we were missing. Oh, sorry, I've copy-pasted the same thing twice. Anyway, they're staffing up, which kind of goes to the conversation we were having about Unreal Engine 5. The fact that they're using it would seem to indicate that they're going to be upping their budget, upping everything about it. So, Brandon, this seems like we can look forward to a pretty, you know, cool AAA caliber RPG from In Exile in a few years.
Which is something the Xbox has sorely been missing the last couple of years. So I'm really hopeful about this, especially because that team is so talented in the RPG space. And look, you don't buy a company unless you like what they make, right? And yeah. Microsoft knows In Exile makes great stuff. And In Exile knows Microsoft has the resources to support them with tech and polish and, you know, foundation of knowledge and whatever it is that Microsoft brings to the table. There's no downside to this. This is all good news. We should all be happy, especially if you're like me and you love RPGs. So, you know, perfect match.
Now, Miranda, the next section here was about a studio you and I love, Double Fine, just down the street from IGN. Now, it seems that we don't need to worry about Tim Schafer and Double Fine being turned into a support studio. Tim Schafer telling GamesIndustry.biz, quote, with Game Pass, it wouldn't make sense to acquire Double Fine and then assign us a bunch of Forza DLC. That's not what you'd want from a studio like Double Fine. And Game Pass seems like a great opportunity to have a diversity of games, a plethora of unusual content. I can see how the type of games that Double Fine makes could fit into that. That's got to be music to your ears.
Yeah, there was like a really funny quote too, because I don't think anybody would expect Double Fine to go on to make Forza DLC. Like that would be the worst. I mean, not because they're not capable, because it's like, why would you do that? Like, they're such a talented studio with like really imaginative games. And so it is good to see Game Industry App is like kind of making the rounds and be like, so how are you guys doing? Like, what's going on here? We do know that we are going to hear from Double Fine here soon in just a few weeks. Yes. At the
next
big
week.
Yeah, we're oh my god, it's next week. Jesus
it's
Christ,
next week.
Excuse me. Time, what is it? And so like we're gonna see what they're working on, and like we know some of the products they've worked on before, and I do agree that like obviously Game Pass is like a huge opportunity for them to do some really cool stuff. So like maybe we see them doing even more like smaller projects, like or mm-hmm. across the board, and like just like, you know, their mainline projects as well. So I'd be really curious to see what sort of games they'll come out with. I personally really love the Double Fine Adventure games, and I would love to see them just pump out so many more. By pump out, I mean lovingly craft, but maybe with smaller teams and like maybe smaller experiences. I've personally been trying to play a lot more adventure games that are smaller bite-sized experiences, and it's just so fun to get those too. So I would love to see them have the opportunity to do those sorts of things as well.
Did you play Broken Age, Miranda?
Yes, I did. I did the second half of our guide for that.
Nice.
I loved doing that. It was, yeah. I did a spoiler-free guide, so you get a bunch of hints instead of just having the answer.
Love it.
Yeah.
That's excellent. Yeah, it's funny. You know, you bring up this, I think you're totally right. Like Game Pass, like the reality is Starbreeze was going to publish Psychonauts 2. That was mm-hmm. the situation prior. And then Starbreeze fell on some hard times financially. I actually don't know what the...
Did they shutter or are they still...
I'm not sure. I did not research that beforehand. This was just an off-the-cuff thought from what Miranda was saying, but yeah, I know they were having some issues. So like the reality was, even if Starbreeze had proceeded to publish Psychonauts 2, they don't have 1/10 of the marketing power of the resources that Microsoft does. And it wouldn't have been on, probably wouldn't have been on Game Pass. Like, so many people are going to find Psychonauts 2 just from Game Pass, particularly if there's any word of mouth that ends up going around with the game, where it's, oh yeah, just download that on Game Pass. So it's Double Fine really does seem like a great fit within the Game Pass and Microsoft ecosystem. Let's move on here. Brandon Tyrell, I know we've been keeping an eye on compulsion games for a while. We Happy Few was a very promising game that turned out good. I think it's fair to say, maybe not like quite as great as we'd hoped for, but it was a good game. And they are seemingly early on. So maybe just as a hint of what's to come or not to come next week at the Xbox Game Showcase, I'm betting we won't see anything from Compulsion, because the GI Biz story talks about this quote from Matt Booty, the head of Xbox first party, talking. Take Compulsion. They're working on their next game and have spent the last year on early ideation. I try to keep us as far away from that as possible. And then as it starts to get exposure within the organization, feedback will come in and things will start to steer. But it's important to leave them alone for as long as possible until they've got something that can walk on its own. And then there's no shortage of feedback within Xbox. So, you know, the quote there is about Microsoft being hands off. But I think a near term takeaway is, even though it's been like 2.5 years, I think, since We Happy Few. I'll look it up while you're talking. But I think it's been a little while, but it sounds like we should not expect them at the event next week.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's not the biggest team in the world by any stretch. And there are kind of two points here. One speaks to Compulsion Games and one speaks to Microsoft's third party, I guess now first party philosophy, right? Which is something that I personally really, really love to hear, because what Matt Booty essentially said was like, hey, we want to give you the tools to perfect your craft, and then we want to get out of the way. Yes, of course, there are checkboxes you have to hit. Microsoft has a portfolio of things that they want to see in their video games. But when you go to any of your studios, you say, hey, we're thinking about this. What are you thinking about? And then, you know, I imagine the studios already have a million ideas of things they can do. It just depends on what they're passionate about. And that kind of leads back to the Compulsion Games example, which is, you know, the folks at MSFT aren't dumb. Like, they buy studios that A, you know, fit their profile and what they're looking for, and B, are super talented, right? Like, look at all the studios they've picked up so far. They all have legitimate bangers in their portfolios. So you look at Compulsion Games, yeah, We Happy Few maybe didn't hit every mark that you're looking for, right? But you can't tell me that wasn't a really, really genuine and intriguing, unique look at a game that we hadn't really seen before.
Absolutely.
And that sort of passion and that sort of weird sort of uniqueness, maybe weird's the wrong adjective to use there, but that sort of uniqueness, that's the element that you can't teach, right? Like, you can teach tech, you can give them money, you can give them resources and time, but you really got to have you got to have that passion for the kernel of the idea. And again, I guess it all doubles back to what Matt said, which is, you know, don't show them the right way to crawl. Let them figure out how to crawl, and then you step in when they're ready to get up on their own 2 feet and make sure they don't fall over on the coffee table, right? Right. So everything speaks to me perfectly as far as what it is they're looking to do with their partners. And I really, really love the idea of like, hey, we're here to help you. We'll give you everything you need, and we're going to stay out of your way because we picked you up for a reason.
Right. It turns out We Happy Few is just about 2 years. So it's been about 2 years. It's early August 2018. So we're a couple years out already from We Happy Few. Time flies.
You think?
finally, Destin. Microsoft, this last bit of this piece that I wanted to share, Microsoft isn't actively shopping for new studios, but they're not shopping. That's right.
We're not looking for everything, but we have a crisp $20 bill in our pocket.
Svilf saying, quote, "We're always in the market for new opportunities with studios. The first priority was making sure the studios had the things that they needed to build the best versions of their games. That means extending some of the timelines and giving them some more, giving them more budgets. We have a really strong support from Satya Nadella, the CEO of Microsoft, and Amy Hood, the CFO. And there's been no signal at all that we should be slowing down, but just to go at a pace that is maintainable for us as a leadership team. We're always out there talking to people, but it has to be the right opportunity." Destin Legarry.
Well, I got an opportunity for you guys. It's called WB, and that's you should right. give him a call.
Give him a call.
Sadia, oh, man. I'm sorry I butchered your name, but call them up. They're worth it.
Yeah. Call the Warner Brothers. Get them on the phone.
I do like the idea that they'll be like, hey, although we are not necessarily not looking, we do need to take care of the studios we have first, like make sure that they're tended to and have what they need. But we're also maybe still looking.
it's weird, right? I feel like what was the quote? 2 billion or 4 billion?
Four. But then there'd be that like licensing.
Literally what Disney paid for Lucas. So that's crazy. That's like going to shop for a couch and then being like, you know what? This couch isn't going to fit. Let's just buy a new house. That's new house money. So I'm really, God, what an interesting.
But what if it's a really beautiful new house with all the amenities you've ever wanted?
That's right.
Look, I am 100% get Microsoft a new house. That's my team. You know, an upgrade. That quote makes me happy because it's a wry little wink of like, you know, we're not looking. I mean, we're not going to make any, we're not going to rush into anything here. I really hope that happens.
Yeah, we talked about it last week. It's too good of an opportunity to pass up if that's a real opportunity. So we shall see. So we are now out of time. And Destin has to go interview some fancy pants celebrity. So he's got a role. But we are at time anyway. We will get back to the loot box and unlock block trivia next week, which means Brandon Tyrell maintains his lead for another week.
Still don't believe it.
You can follow me on Twitter if you'd like, at @DMC_Ryan. How about you, Brandon Tyrell?
Hey, you can find me on Twitter at Brandon Tyrell on Twitter. That's about it.
Well, that was short and sweet. Look at you.
Out of time. I don't know what you're talking about.
Destin Legarry.
At Destin Legarry, twitch.tv/Destin if you want to watch me play a lot of Destiny.
I do. I'm glad you gave the link because that's exactly what I want. Miranda Sanchez, take us home.
Hi, you can find me at Havoc Rose, and that's Havoc with a K, on Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch. And tonight I'll be continuing my playthrough of BioShock 2, which I am not loving, but we're going to keep playing. But I want to get to Minerva's death, so I'm going to finish this game. I would like to report that I am starting to feel better. I can open my eyes more. I think I'm sounding a little bit more clear. I think the BAM and the medication helped out. So
it wasn't the medication. It was all the podcast
combined.
Absolutely.
Combined powers.
You just worked through it.
Well, thank you, Brandon, Miranda, and Destin. And special thanks to Jason Ronald from the Xbox team for stopping by and talking to us about Xbox Velocity Architecture. That'll do it for episode 452. So next week, let's see, I believe. Yeah, I don't think we're doing a show next week until Thursday. The event, the live post show. So join us live on IGN, or of course, if you can't make it live, it'll be there for you in all the usual video or podcast ways for you after. But here we go, July 23rd, Xbox Game Showcase. We will see you then.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.